Couple of announcements. We have some letters of withdrawal from the governor for the appointments of Bonnie Driggers, as Board of Nursing, and Amoy Williamson, Board of Dentistry. And the updated legislative reviews for the boiler rules and Board of Forestry are at your place.
Excellent. Thank you. Been waiting.
And I'd like to open a public hearing for the Aviation Board. Mr. Smith. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Well, we'll see if we can fix that.
Would you like me to make an opening statement or just answer?
What I tell you, Joe, what just give us kind of just a brief overview of where you are, where you'd like to head, and just where you'd like us, how you'd like us to help you head there.
Well, I understand that you have all received a copy of the handwritten application I made to the governor for this job. So I won't repeat things there, but I would just say I'm very delighted to be here and grateful for the committee to hear from. It is a job that I love a lot. It's a job that I think I do very well at. My interest in aviation goes back now 39 years, and I've been involved in aviation one way or another for 39 years. And there are three things that I particularly make me want this particular job. I knew I wanted to do something for the state, for state government, when I retired as a business consultant a year and a half ago. And one of the reasons I did, because my consulting business took me out of state anywhere from 8 to 18 times a month, which made it impossible for me to participate in really anything in my community. And it was time to retire so I could get involved more in my community. And the when the aviation board was expanded, I saw an opportunity to seek this position because there are three things I care about in aviation. Number one, I care a lot about freedom of the skies, about the freedom to fly, the freedom to get in an airplane and go places. The second, I see a great opportunity for the aviation board to help the public and government agencies, everybody see that aviation is, or at least ought to be, part of the overall transportation scheme. That aviation is not, the general aviation as well as commercial aviation, is not just for people going to places to have fun, but it is a very, very important part of the economy of the state, or could be. Third, I am very excited about Chairman Bill Wilkins' vision, recognizing that there are a lot of things going on in aviation, generally in the Northwest, but especially in Oregon, in construction of airplanes, one of the maybe the nicest general aviation airplanes being built right now. It's being built just 100 miles east of us.
On its way to France, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And there are a lot of other things that are happening in Oregon, and the way he expressed it, he would like to see Oregon become Wichita of the 21st century. And for those of you who are not familiar with the significance of that, Wichita was the place where most of the development, especially relating to general aviation, though an awful lot of aviation generally happened in the 20th century. There's an opportunity for Oregon to do that in the 21st century, and I would like to be able to help in that.
I spent a lot of time in Wichita. You need to rethink that.
I'm not talking about the weather or the topography.
Talking about the women.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to hear I'm being very careful.
That's, and I just called his wife, so that, we've got it covered.
So I'd like to know, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we, you know, you and I chatted about a couple of months back, but there was an issue there about commercial. You want
to know Mr. Nelson or not? I hope he's here to say something on my behalf.
Does this mean you want to say something?
If I have the opportunity,
please.
Hi, I'm Michael Nelson. Live in Baker City, and it's a pleasure to be here and see my old friend Randy. It's a
nice to see you, Mike.
Times. You're a good guy, good man. It's good to see you.
Me too.
Seen you in a while. I'm vice chair of the Aeronautics Commission, and it's been a pleasure for me. This is a new board that you people created, and it's been an interesting process. And I never met this man prior to the formation of this committee. We've had over a year to implement rules and regulations for state-owned airports, commercial ventures, and private pilots. It's been a long and sort of tedious task to implement all this information and bring it together. And Joe started showing up in the very beginning. This shows you what kind of mind he has, and he must have a lot of free time, because he started up from the day one showing up in the audience. And he has added as much to the process as any one of the board members. And I know nothing about his background other than he's a pilot, but he has been an integral part of the process up to where we brought it, and we're almost finished with all the rules and regulations. It's like sitting in revenue again than when we dealt with Measure 5. So never thought we'd be in that process again. But I really, and I'm speaking on behalf of the chair, Mr. Wilkins, he'd make a great member, and he has really contributed. So if you, I humbly thank you for my opportunity to speak, and we'd sure like to have him on board.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Does anybody else like to speak? I don't have a sign-up. The question that arose a few weeks back, the commercial aviation as a constituent, how do you think the board views, how are you going to view trying to take care of commercial interest along with general aviation interest?
Well, as I personally told an individual who I know is especially concerned about that, person who represents Alaska Airlines, I think Alaska Airlines will be delighted with the recognition that I have of their problems for a couple of reasons. Number one, between 1988 and 2001, I carried a gold card for Alaska Airlines because I flew on them many times a month. But more than that, my first involvement in aviation was as executive administrative assistant for United States Congressman representing Eastern Oregon. And Pendleton had challenges wanting to keep commercial air transportation in Pendleton. And I was assigned the responsibility to do whatever could be done from the congressman's office to help that happen. And that was back in the days when airlines couldn't go anywhere without specific permission of the Civil Aeronautics Board. Of course, no longer exists. And so I got an early education about commercial aviation. And then when I left Congressman Ullman's office, I was hired by a law firm that specialized in aviation law. And it was kind of fun because in the CAB, you did not have to be a lawyer to represent a client before the Civil Aeronautics. They treated me just as if I were a lawyer, and I had the opportunity to actually represent commercial carriers.
You make me mad. Good for that.
Commercial carriers that before the Civil Aeronautics Board, including West Coast Airlines, which some of you will remember was once upon a time the principal carrier in Oregon. And I've maintained that interest, and I think I have a good understanding of both the vocabulary and the challenges of commercial aviation, and I think that they will be very happy with my understanding.
Okay, well, I hope so. I say that was an issue, and, you know, let's hope we don't need to revisit it later on. But do you have a feel for what you'd like the legislature to help you with to make your job easier? You're not getting any money, but other than that...
Well, I understand, of course, our funds all come from dedicated funds, that principally from jet fuel tax.
You still have to spend them wisely.
We'll be stealing that next.
I wouldn't get too cocky.
That's your question would be for you to resist the blame. We're getting a bit of money.
Just learning to be a Republican. I steal that money wherever I can.
Wherever you get it, that's right.
I think it would be presumptuous of me as not having yet served on the board to express opinions on that, but I will tell you an area that I'm doing a lot of thought about, and I'm doing it partly because of my legal background, is one of the big issues right now before the board, which has, to some extent, has pitted it against some of the aviation community as it tries to establish reasonable rules and regulations for the use and support of state-owned airports, is how you balance protecting the economic interests of people who are trying to make a living on airports and potential users and users of the airports and taxpayers and potential victims of accidents who need to have some kind of liability protection, and putting all that together in such a way that you don't put standards so high that you drive fixed base operators out of business and make it impossible for people to make a living in the aviation business. At the same time, you adequately protect everybody who needs to be protected. And I don't have any specific answers yet, but I think that it is possible sometime down the line we might want to come to the legislature and ask for assistance in creating a balance that works.
Well, we're here to help.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Miller.
Do you get involved in airport expansions, like the runways?
Depends. If you're talking about state-owned airports, the answer is yes. If you're talking about non-state-owned airports, other than possibly being asked to add our recommendations or opinions, no.
For example,
what airport would you be talking about?
Like Bandon.
Bandon is a state-owned airport. Hey. Whatever happens at Bandon, I'll have to come across my desk.
Right. Okay.
Just because they lengthen the masters doesn't mean they're going to lengthen the...
I understand that they want an extension down there because they've got a great golf course down there and they want to be able to get in at least maybe a Gulfstream eventually, but at least prop jets.
You would review the request, and then is it the city and the county also where everybody's in there making their bids?
I should probably refer precisely this question to the administrator, Ann Cook, who is here. Speak out of turn. But as I understand it, all of those parties that you've named are persons whose opinions would be sought and listened to. But as long as it is a state-owned airport, the ultimate decision will be made by the
Aeronautics Board.
I know there is some consideration by the city, by the community, maybe to take it over from the state, and sometime down the line that makes sense if it was going to be good for everybody.
Well, there's another strip that I've read about recently in Sun River, at least in their local newspaper, is talking about bringing in apparently some commercial flights, which must mean like Horizon.
Sun River, of course, is a privately owned airport that is
okay, so they can do
by the public, but we would not be making decisions on that, although that might be something that we might help promote, because one of the interests of the board certainly is to encourage commercial aviation in the state.
Now, if I can continue, how old do you have to be to get a license to fly in this state?
The state has nothing to do with it. It's federal and it's 16.
16 federal. Do you have any input with respect to, you mentioned freedom of the skies, do you have any communication with, what is that, the FAA or something, with respect to where people can go and when they can leave? And
the answer is I have probably the same communication opportunities that you do at this moment as a taxpayer and a citizen. I would hope that there might be avenues for a tiny bit of additional opportunity as a member of the Aviation Board, and also because I am active in the Oregon Pilots Association, but directly, any kind of dotted line, there is none.
Well, and the reason I ask those questions is, I guess I was reminded last evening on the news, there happened to be this information about a lawsuit filed by the parents of the kid who flew into a building in Florida, claiming that his Accutane apparently created a mindset that he needed to fly into a building.
That's I think, a bigger problem for the legal community.
Well, no, I hear you. But it also, I think, to me, in the safety question, which again may not be your venue, is when you take off from Aurora or Bandon or wherever it might be as a pilot, as a single pilot, non-commercial, let's say in a visual flight rule situation, you probably can go to a lot of places before anybody, like in one of the little vehicles Commander Hooper gets into on occasion, can slow you down or divert you. So I don't know what the progress of, and I don't want to over-control the skies, believe me, but I just wonder if you who are up there and more aware of things worry about that.
Let me respond to that. This is obviously something that those of us who consider ourselves part of the flying community have given and are giving a great deal of thought to. But I would suggest try to get in your mind a good picture of the tail end of that Cessna sticking out of the side of the building in Florida. And that's about the best he could do, if you see what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We will never be able to keep people who are bound and determined to commit suicide from committing suicide, whether they use a gun or an airplane or a car running into a semi or jumping off a cliff. I think that it is appropriate for us to become more sensitive in every mode of transportation where people can get into a vehicle and on their own go, whether it is automobiles or trucks or vans or airplanes, to become more sensitive to psychological implications and to security issues. But in the real world, the airplane I fly, for example, if I wanted to load that airplane up with fertilizer to its maximum, it would be about comparable to what I could get in a Volkswagen. And maybe not even that much, because I have weight and balance problems in the airplane, which I don't have in the Volkswagen. The person in the van is vastly potentially more dangerous. And so I think we need to be aware of all of those things as we nonetheless address the problem of how do we try to minimize the likelihood of somebody in any kind of a vehicle doing something that destroys lives and property.
I appreciate that.
Further questions?
Okay.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Close hearing of session.
Mr. Chair, I move the appointment of R.P. Joe Smith to the State Aviation Board to the Senate floor with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Any objections?
Really?
Hearing none, so ordered. Close work session, open public hearing. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that. Mr. Open public hearing on Carl
Vizentainer.
I'm sorry. Vizentainer? Vizentainer. You have to carry him tomorrow.
That's the deal.
I'm doing it all.
I can do Irish names.
Yeah, okay, all right.
He changed. He used to be O-Byzantiner, but he didn't want to be a different.
When he heard that, I was talking to somebody.
With the IRA.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Carl, maybe the same question. You have something prepared, but just kind of, you know, where do you think you're headed? What's your vision for the committee and GSPC? I always try and ask the same question. How do you think that the legislature can help, you know, implement those policies or help you do your job better?
When did you become so helpful, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, without money.
This never happened during the session.
Yes. That's because I know I won't have to do anything.
I see. Well, okay.
No, I think I can respond certainly to the first part of the question, and I'll get to the second part as well. Since I completed the application asking to be considered for either this or two other ones that I put in, I've had time to reflect a little bit more deeply, and I have a few reasons for thinking that I should serve on that commission. First, I believe myself to be qualified. My experience in ethics formation and administration, both in private business and as a member of the Oregon Mediation Association's Ethics Committee, I think qualified me. Second, I'm simply able to. My business career of 32 years put a lot of things that I wanted to do with my life on a back burner until I retired 6 years ago. And all of the things that have been put on hold are now being able to be indulged in, and one of those things is public service. And it's always been one of my objectives. And third, I believe that leadership, whether private or public, and especially public, must be held to the highest standards of integrity and ethical behavior. Now, if we expect the people who serve us be shining examples of those high standards, I think it's incumbent upon us to make our best efforts to provide the leadership and support and guidance, whatever assistance is needed to assist them in doing that. it's not enough to just criticize and punish. We must be proactive and help lead the way, and I think I can help with that. As to the second part, what the legislature might possibly do, I'm afraid that I'd be much more able to give a cogent answer on that when I've had some experience
yeah.
to know what I'm doing.
You know, we had had some hearings in this committee. Randy was here. You guys weren't on, you know, the whole GSPC trying to, is there something that we should be doing differently, could be doing differently to make it work better? You know, we never really got too far with it, but, you know, from our perspective, it's always a question that comes up as to exactly how this whole animal works. And, you know, unfortunately, it takes a negative tone more often than positive, and that's, you know, I think we need to work on that, but we need to be held to the highest standards. You know, how you get that way and not, you know, not nitpick to death is always a constant question. But
I'm sure that's a balancing act.
Yeah,
I'm sure the negative nature is in the nature of the beast, the very subject matter that we deal with. As I said, you know, after I've had some experience, perhaps I'd be in a better position to say what we could do better. Should we be doing something different? I think the answer to almost any commission, legislature, anything, is the answer is yes.
Yeah.
We have to find what those are.
Well, we kind of left it, Pat. We kind of left it with Pat and everybody. You know, give, you know, take the next 2 years. You know, this interim period, take a look at it. If there's something that, you know, really strikes your fancy, you know, bring it back to us, and we'll, you know, we'll try and get it done. But I say the constant tension. It turns out to be more negative more times than positive. You know, I'd like to be able to work on that to some extent, if at all possible.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, Senator Corkin.
Yeah, it's just to piggyback on that. I mean, I think one of the things that would be helpful as a legislator is to, from the point of view of being a practitioner, is to bring your experience and background to do as objective, you know, an analysis as you can of, you know, what cases come before the Ethics Commission and what seems to be the most problematic aspects of it, and knowing, of course, that it is kind of a negative venue, of course, I think that would be very helpful to the legislature.
Keep that in mind. Yeah.
Senator Deckard.
Thank you. Just kind of on that note, I'm very much reminded of the state losing, I believe it was around, and this might not be exact, $300,000 to $400,000, and we're in a severe budget shortfall. And not only did, and it was a recent case involving current legislators, but not only did we lose the case across the board, we had to pay $300,000 or $400,000. I don't know what the exact figure is.
And
I'm sorry? $82,000, just in the other council's legal bill, so $82,000. And to me, I would hope that the commission take a look at that case and at least look at it very clearly, because we do not have money to, A, use all of our attorneys' times in the Justice Department, but also pay the bills of outside counsel to the tune of $82,000 for the entire case, was well into the six figures. And to me, that is just has always stuck out to me as one where, as a prospective commissioner, would hope that you would use your mediation skills to at least find a common ground and preclude that from happening in the future.
I'd be pleased if I could do that. Sure, that's a thorny and never-ending problem. In my previous life, I was an executive for an insurance company. We were constantly assessing whether or not it made sense to pursue or not to pursue any given case. And it's a little bit like throwing hand grenades out of your foxhole. And you can't handle them all, and some of them are duds, and some of them blow up. And every now and then you throw the wrong one out, and you get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't...
That only happens once, generally.
Mm-hmm.
trouble with lawyers. They keep coming back and coming back. Yeah.
Well, I was assuming that the person in the foxhole was a lawyer. And
nine lives.
I'm getting to think he might be Irish.
But I hope I was responsive to your question.
Okay, further questions? Anybody like to testify, Carl? Or against? Okay, close public hearing, open discussion.
Mr. Chair, despite the fact that Mr. Visitainer was observed sitting next to Commissioner Ray, I move the appointment of Carl Visitainer to Government Standards and Practices Commission to the Senate floor with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Any objections? Senator Miller, any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
I think I heard a four out there.
Thank you, Carl.
Speak for himself.
Okay, close work session. Open public hearing, yes, aye.
Your input's important, Senator Miller.
Right. Workers' Comp Board, Vera Langer, Greg Lowell. Did we open anything?
We did.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
It's been a long, hard road, hasn't it?
Yes.
Would you like me to start?
Please.
My name is Vera Langer, and don't be misled by my accent. I've been living in Oregon for 20 years. It's just that I can't get rid of it.
It's Eastern Oregon, right?
Yeah. Or Irish, yeah. You may say. But I'm a full-blooded Oregonian. I am interested in an appointment to the Workers' Compensation Board as an employer representative. I have been practicing workers' comp law in the past 9 years. On behalf of representing legal interests of the employers and insurers, primarily before the board, the agency in which to which I applied, and also appellate courts. And I believe that I fully understand the complexities of the workers' compensation law. Although the law changes every 2 years or so, so I can never say that I fully understand, but I'm at least versed enough in the law to be able to contribute to the board's function, I would hope. And for me personally, it would be very rewarding to be involved in the decision-making process.
My name is Greg Lowell. I have been in the workers' compensation business for 15 years, first 7 years with a couple different insurance companies, and for the last 8 years with an employer in which we administered our own workers' compensation claims. I'm not an attorney. I have a pretty good claims background, and I hope to bring to the board the perspective of what it's like on the ground floor of doing claims. The years working for an employer, I've gained a different perspective on the system than I did in my first 7 years where I worked for an insurance company and basically read case files and made decisions and so forth. And when you're working directly with the supervisors, the injured workers who I meet in my office and talk about their injuries and try to help them through the system, you see the humanity behind it a little bit differently than you do when you're looking at the files. And I hope to bring to the Workers' Compensation Board that sense of what it's like on the ground floor and how these decisions, these case law decisions, will impact once they hit the ground. I believe I'll bring that common sense approach to deciding the cases, and I look forward to the opportunity to work with the board members.
You guys are both in the business. What big hurdles are out there? What big hills do we have to climb over the next year or so in workers' comp? Sarah,
Well, the 2001 legislative session implemented some changes to the law, which are quite significant, I would say. So it would be in the next few years, I believe, we would see presidential decisions in which this new law will be applied and perhaps interpreted. There, as I understand it, as a busy appellate practitioner, I know that there is a big backlog of cases with the board right now, and so the primary task for us would be to just take that caseload and get decisions.
How long is it going to take to work through that? Do you have a feel?
I don't. I really don't. I know that the board didn't issue any decisions probably from the end of January until last week. So as I can imagine, there's quite a bit of cases waiting.
Harry, what's a big hurdle ahead of the system?
I echo Vera's comments about the changes from the 2001 session, which will probably not hit us for a little while. I think there's, obviously changes in what is considered a compensable claim and compensability standards, which will require some interpretation of, medical issues. I think there's also a growing body of cases out there that primarily are disputes about the process of claims processing, which I think are becoming extraordinarily complex as the system changes and the rules and the administrative rules change, and the rules are getting to be this high now, and I think it's going to be a real challenge to wade through not only the sort of the compensability, is the claim accepted or denied questions, but also was the claim processed correctly according to the laws and the rules.
Do you want us to make more legislation next session?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll speak to that. I guess at some point you need to let things sit and sift out. It's going to be...
Oh, you silly guy. Boy, are you a...
This is a medication control issue.
But on the other hand, I know how much you get this committee likes to hear workers' compensation during the session. It's supposed to be a popular...
No, I think that came through loud and clear.
No, we actually, next session we're going to do land use. We're not going to do workers'
compensation. Okay, you guys are off the hook for a while. Yeah, I would echo that. I think we need to let the thing perk for a period of time. But you know us.
Speak for yourself, sir.
For the questions, if you're happy, then I'm nervous. So.
That's why I didn't say I was happy.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, anybody, you strap hangers, need to put a comment out there?
Do you have any complaints about Marla Ray? We're always interested in listening to complaints about Marla. Oh, the hands are going up. All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Close here. No report session.
Mr. Chair.
I move
the appointment of Vera Langer from Eastern Oregon and Greg Lowell to the Workers' Comp Board to the Senate floor with the recommendation that the appointments be confirmed en bloc.
Senator Corcoran moves the appointment of Vera Langer from the far eastern Oregon.
Apparently.
Greg Lowell to the Workers' Comp Board to the Senate floor. Hey, that's smacking me.
The fine broke.
For the recommendation of the appointments may be confirmed in block. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. That will close work session and open work session on the rest of the pack here.
Mr. Chair. I move the appearances to be waived in the committee. Am I doing right here?
Yes.
Okay. And that the committee recommend the following appointments and reappointments be confirmed by the Senate with multiple appointments to the same board considered en bloc. The appointment of Dennis Copeland to the Board of Boiler Rules, the appointment of Brian Gard to the Commission on Children and Families, the reappointments of Gene Martin and Ellen Young, and the appointment of Richard Swart to the Board of Dentistry, the appointment of Cynthia Moore to the Dispute Resolution Commission, the appointments of Larry Giustina, William Hutchison, and Diane Snyder to the State Board of Forestry. He didn't know how to pronounce his name, did you? The reappointment, he's got a great golf course down there, by the way. Senator Miller knows all about that.
Yes, I do.
The reappointment of Gary Gatos and appointment of Susan Band to the Lane County Mass Transit District Board. The reappointment of Mitchell Boyce, Richard Lauer, and Lauren Winters to the Oregon Board on Maritime Pilots. The reappointment of Frank Spokas, Jr., and the appointment of John C. Steiger to the Board of Medical Examiners. The appointment of Charles Moore to the Physical Therapist Licensing Board, the reappointment of John Anhorn to the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation Board of Directors,
the appointment of Bob Wheel to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Didn't he used to play for the Grateful Dead? No, that's Bob Vera. The appointment of William Blosser, Martin Goebel, John Ledger, Paul Risser, and Sarah Vickerman to the Sustainability Board. The appointment of Donna Gilmore to the State Board of Tax Practitioners. The appointment of Kathleen Dotton Cosgrove to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. The appointments of Christy Sweeney and Emily Westberg to the Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. The reappointment of Sonia Svensson, and the appointments of Vicki Wegener and V. Anna Willman to the Commission for Women, and the appointment of Debbie Lincoln to the Workforce Investment Board, sir.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Yahoo.
This work session, with that, we are adjourned.